Oh, this is going to be a great Wednesday show. Great Wednesday show. Second hour, Carlo is going to be here. And we're going to talk about which Catholic doctrine troubles you. Is there something that the Catholic Church teaches or believes that you're like, I can't really get on board with that? This second hour is for you then. First hour, a topic we've been wanting to cover for a while and needed to make contact with and schedule a qualified person to do this because it is a little bit of a difficult subject for some folks. We're going to talk about in vitro fertilization this hour. 888-318-7884. If you have questions about in vitro fertilization, 888-318-7884. Our guest for the hour is Stephanie Gray. She's an international speaker who has given more than 1 billion pro-life presentations, or something like, so nearly 1,000 anyways. She's the author of Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth, as well as A Physician's Guide to Discussing Abortion. You can find out all about Stephanie Gray at loveunleasheslife.com. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. We are so close yet still so far. I'm in sunny California.
Yes, it is sunny too, finally. But you got here after the earthquake, so congratulations on your timing.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate coming in where it's at least not moving right now, and hopefully
yes,
doesn't.
Right. Occasionally it moves. You just got to get used to it.
Right.
Would you agree with me that in vitro fertilization is a difficult topic?
It is difficult, and I would say it's difficult for two reasons. I think the first one is that the desire for children is a God-ordained desire. It is a good desire. And when someone struggles with infertility, they would think automatically, well, that's not good, so my desire for children is good, so why not IVF? And the other reason that makes it a difficult topic is that people have been conceived and brought to term via IVF, and if we are at all critical of IVF, it sounds like we're critical of other human beings. And so it is a touchy subject for sure.
Yeah, I saw a statistic today while I was getting ready for the show, something more than 1%, probably less than 2%, but more than 1% of babies born in the U.S. now are conceived using what's called ART, which mostly is IVF. ART is what? Artificial Reproductive Technologies.
Assisted Reproductive Technologies. Yeah. I believe it's assisted, but either assisted or artificial. The point is it's not through normal sexual intercourse, but the involvement of a third party outside the married couple that is assisting with the achievement of pregnancy. And and we're seeing like an increase in twins, for example, which can be explained in part due to things like in vitro fertilization.
888-318-7884 is the number if you have a question in regard to in vitro fertilization and the Catholic view of it. You are welcome to call 888-31-TRUTH. When I say the Catholic view of in vitro fertilization, it strikes me that Catholics are out of the mainstream on this, even the mainstream of other Christians and other religions. That's also true, right?
Yes, I would say. I mean, certainly you can find people of other religions or other Christian denominations who would object to in vitro fertilization, but I would say not to the same level that we see institutionally. The Catholic Church has objected to it and consistently objected to it. And it, I think in part, is just due to the very hierarchical structure of the Catholic Church, that we have a pope kind of a very top down. And so the Church has really fleshed out a teaching on this in a way that I haven't seen with other religions, for sure.
So maybe we can review some of that. How do you, if someone says to you, look, Stephanie, give me the basics of what the Church teaches about in vitro fertilization, how do you get into that?
So I would start with how even in vitro fertilization works, that what happens is a woman's ovaries are stimulated, typically hyper-stimulated, so that multiple eggs are released. And then a man provides a sperm sample, typically through masturbation. And then a scientist takes the eggs that were retrieved, the sperm that was obtained, and puts them together in a petri dish. And then once the embryos come to be at fertilization, but which happens in a dish rather than the woman's body, those those embryos are either implanted in the woman's body. Some are discarded right away, which means they're killed. Some may be given to science, which again means they'll be experimented on and killed. Or some may be put in the freezer and their fate be unknown until the parents decide, if at all, at some future point what to do with them. So understanding that's basically how IVF works, the Catholic Church would object to it for a number of reasons. The first is, while the desire for children is good and the end result of a child is good, the means of using IVF to get to that end result destroys some humans in order to create another. And I gave the examples of that, whether we're freezing kids, we're killing some of them, and so forth. The other thing it does is it treats human beings as though we are objects, that we're commodities that can be manufactured, that we can be made, rather than subjects which should be begotten, received as gifts. And the moment you're involving a third party who's forcing kind of sperm and egg together in a petri dish, no longer are we receptively in a state of receiving the gift of human life. No longer is love unleashing life through the act of sexual intercourse, but science is unleashing life. An unrelated third party is forcing life into being, creating another individual. And then what often happens in that mentality of commodification, of objectification, is just as when I buy something from the store, if it's not quite perfect, I return it and I get my money back or another object. That's what's happening with the in vitro fertilization industry. There are children that have been conceived whose parents are initially excited to be pregnant. And then there have been cases where, as the pregnancy progresses, they have genetic testing done, find out the child has Down syndrome. And because they had that objectification mentality, that commodification mentality, it's like, oh, wait, I wanted a baby, but not an imperfect baby.
Yeah, right.
I didn't want a baby with Down syndrome. And there have been cases where people have then pursued abortion after desperately wanting a child, struggling with infertility,
because the kid wasn't good enough.
His kid wasn't good enough.
Well, if I may, just real quick word, because fancy word alert, commodification. Essentially, what you're saying is the person, the child, is not being treated as a gift, but as a commodity that essentially can be bought and sold or created and destroyed at will.
Correct. And it's about use. It's how you are for me. You're useful to me or you're not useful to me. So if you're perfect, hey, yes, I want you. But if you're less than perfect in some cases, then parents would dispose of the child, very sadly. But I would say most foundationally, and this is why the church would, even if those two things could be addressed, would still object to IVF. Because some people, perhaps even some non-Catholic Christians, might say, okay, what if we didn't create excess embryos? What if we only created one or two and implanted them both right away? What if we only used egg and sperm from a husband and wife who had already committed to marriage? What if we made a commitment not to genetically test the child? What if we made a commitment to accept the child regardless of whether they were imperfect, perfect or not? Wouldn't it be okay then? And then the church would say IVF is still wrong, because what it does is it takes the creation of life outside of the act of sexual intimacy between a husband and wife, and it involves a third party. It replaces the act of sex rather than aiding the act of sex. So, for example, if a couple struggles with infertility because the woman's not ovulating, you can restore her body to health by giving her certain drugs that would cause her body to ovulate. Or if a man has erectile dysfunction, he can get, if he's married, Viagra so that he can have the erection required to have the sexual intercourse that would result in a child being conceived. But whether you're taking drugs to stimulate ovulation or whether you're taking Viagra, in either case, you're getting aid with the sexual act, but you're not replacing the sexual act, nor are you involving a third party in the sexual act. The problem with IVF is that you are replacing the sexual act. No longer is it an act of lovemaking that creates life, but it's involving an unrelated third party, so that the very existence and beginning of a new human being does not happen beneath the mother's heart, but happens in a cold, sterile lab, not between the father and mother, but at the hands of a stranger. And so that is why it would be objectionable, even if some of the other factors were addressed.
It's probably the hardest one. I mean, as a matter of fact, it seems to me that you go from, as you give the three basic Catholic objections to IVF, one, that human beings are going to be killed in this process, or at least there's a very high likelihood that human beings are going to be killed. Two, that Now I forgot what two is.
Oh, you treat humans as objects, you treat, or commodity, yeah, you the mentality.
Treat the baby as a commodity, not as a person, not as a subject, but as a thing to be made or destroyed at your will. And third, because it means the creation of life outside of the sexual act. The creation of life removed from the sexual act, so that essentially everybody's alone in this. Nobody's, mm-hmm. instead of mother and father joined together in the sexual act, the child present within the mother's body at conception, everybody's off alone in a different room, and the child's, as you said, in a cold petri dish being right. conceived. It seems to me that last one is the hardest one for maybe the modern person to wrap the mind around. Like, I think there's a certain utilitarianism where we say, well, who cares?
Well, this is the challenge in a culture that in many ways these days has rejected God, that third argument really comes more from a faith-based perspective, from a natural law perspective,
right.
where we say, I don't decide how I ought to be, how my body is designed. God decided that, and I'm to discover it. I think in part, you know, you could say to someone, look, my eye is designed to see. And if I went to my doctor and said, there's a problem, my eye is not smelling, my doctor would be like, no, there's no problem at all. Your eye is not designed to smell. That we can just look at our bodies and see that they are designed a certain way for a certain purpose. So take that principle then and look at our bodies from a sexual perspective. Interestingly, it's our reproductive organs that in each of us, we only have half of the system. So my circulatory system is in its wholeness in my body. My yeah. respiratory system, same thing. My reproductive system is not. I only have half the system. So same with a man. His circulatory system is in its wholeness, his respiratory system is in its wholeness, but his reproductive system is not in its wholeness. It's only half. It requires the other, the opposite sex, for the reproductive system to be used in its wholeness, in its full way. So it involves the body of another, the partnership of another, which the church would teach should happen. This coming together of these two half systems to create a whole should come together through the committed relationship of marriage. And why is that? Well, I would say because if you look again at natural law, at the nature of our bodies, when a couple engages in sexual intimacy, first of all, there's bonding that occurs at a more profound level than just everyday interaction with strangers, that the hormones released when a couple has sexual intercourse are bonding hormones that connect them more deeply to one another. And so you want that to happen in the circumstance of marriage because the bonds are so strong that if you are having sex with multiple different people outside of a committed relationship, you're bonding and then breaking and bonding and then breaking, and that's not good for the human spirit. The second thing we can look at what our bodies are telling us is that fertility is inherently tied into sexuality, into the act of sex. And so because creating children is a possible outcome of sex, that when you have sex outside of marriage, then you're creating possibly children outside of an environment that is an ideal environment for them, because children need ideally the groundedness and the rootedness of a committed family relationship where there's permanence and where there's love. So understanding all of that, that our bodies in their completeness come together with the opposite sex, and with that comes babies and bonding, and that should only happen in marriage. That therefore means sex should only happen in marriage. And if sex is the path to children, then children should only come to be as a result of sex. And so in vitro fertilization involves creating children outside of sex, really without sex. Rather than having a communion of persons, you have isolation, as you mentioned. The man's off masturbating. The woman's eggs are being extracted. The embryo is coming into being at the hands of a stranger. Versus the husband and wife becoming literally one flesh. As the scriptures say, a man shall leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, the two shall become one flesh. They're becoming one flesh. There's a communion of persons, and that communion of persons is so powerful that it defies math. 1 + 1 can actually equal 3. And so when those two people come together, there is this possibility that life will spring forth from their love, from an act that is designed only for them. And so when you involve a scientist, you're bringing in a party into this intimate connection of love and life that's designed only for the two people who've committed permanently together in marriage.
888-318-7884. The number. I am going to go to callers when we come back and let callers ask their questions of Stephanie Gray. 888-318-7884. However, before I do that, we got to do two things. One, I got to take a break. And I am going to ask you when we come back about the fact that you're making a lot of people sad, that there's, what are the implications of this for, all the new types of family that people advocate for? What are the implications of this for a husband and wife who really want to make a baby, but they're not able to do that in the natural way? So we'll address all that when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call us now with your question. Hello? On Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Everybody on earth, there was a vote, and everybody on earth loves that theme music. It's the most popular theme music in the world. Hey, John Henry Newman, a blessed John Henry Newman, Cardinal John Henry Newman, is about to be a canonized saint on October 13th of this year. And he said, to be deep in history is to cease to be Protestant. That's why, okay, we don't mean that in a mean way. We're just saying that that getting in touch with history helps you get in touch with your Catholic faith. That's why we're having a sale right now over at shop.catholic.com. It's called the Deep in History Sale in honor of blessed, soon-to-be Saint John Henry Newman. Dozens of great history CDs, books, DVDs, all on sale. Just go to the shop and click on the Deep in History banner and check out the deals at shop.catholic.com. Welcome back, Stephanie Gray. I'm sorry that I accused you of making people sad before we went to the break.
That's okay. I have a cool story to tell you related to Cardinal Newman.
If you say you knew him, then this is your last time on the show.
Well, what I was going to say is I don't know if this makes me a relic. And I don't know if I should even be saying this, but I'm going to say it.
Okay.
So I was in England a few years ago, and it's all about who you know. And so I know someone who took me to where he had lived. And then this one priest said, follow me, with the person I was with. And he said, I'm going to take you into a room we normally don't take people into. And it was his room, untouched.
What?
Since when he had to. Oh, yeah. Like, he had all these amazing relics and like the best of the best, and his fiddlebacks, like his vestments and stuff. And I was in the room. So I don't know what that makes me. Like, I touched things, but yeah.
Well, I hope not a thief.
No, I didn't take things.
Okay, all right.
I'm a partial relic myself.
All right.
I know I'm stretching it.
Yeah, a lot, actually. But that is actually a really cool story, though. I mean, what a great, great man John Henry Newman is, too. I mean, it's just such a happy thing that he'll be a saint for the whole church. It's just wonderful. All right, so I accused you of making people sad. How do we address, you know, people who say, well, we're a lesbian couple, or we're, a couple with a health problem, or we just want babies, 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 babies. So, but that's not a bad desire, as you said. Why are you making all these people sad?
Well, and I think this is such a difficult topic. I don't want to make people sad, and my heart grieves for the people who desperately want children and are incapable of conceiving them. I have a friend that I'm emailing with right now, and she and I and her husband are praying so hard that she and her husband will be able to conceive, and they've never conceived a child yet in the course of their marriage. And I have actually several friends who have struggled with infertility, and I've seen the great cross that has been to them individually as well as to them as a couple. So I think we need to acknowledge that is not ideal, and God is a God of life and a God of love. And when Christ came to this earth, he worked to heal people and to restore people back to health. That when someone was paralyzed, he let them stand up. When someone was blind, he let them see. When someone was bleeding, he stopped the 12 years of bleeding. When a child was dead, he raised the child and said, little girl, get up. So where people have infertility issues, not by relationship choice, such as the lesbian couple example that you gave, but where you have, let's say, an opposite sex couple who recognize what I said before the break, that each of their reproductive systems are only half of that system until they come together and that forms the whole. But if there's a pathology there, if the couple is having trouble conceiving, they should be praying for God to heal them, and God could heal them. He could perform a miracle. Number two, to seek medical help to identify what the underlying causes of infertility is and try to correct those. So there are a number of helpful medical centers that do that. There's NAPRO technology, Creighton technology through the Pope Paul VI Institute in Nebraska, where they will help couples achieve pregnancy through sexual intercourse, but identifying the underlying problems and correcting those to begin with. So perhaps a woman has blocked fallopian tubes, so they can do a surgery to unblock her tubes. Perhaps she has endometriosis, so you could have endometriosis surgery. Perhaps she's not ovulating, then you could identify that and give her the right hormones to get her body up to the proper level. So restore the body to health, just as Jesus did. There are actual medical interventions that can be done to help restore the body. So first of all, we need to give people hope that that can happen and work for some people. And there have been couples that haven't been able to conceive and have sought these alternative methods and then achieved pregnancy through normal sexual intimacy between the husband and wife. There's also femhealth.org. That's femmhealth.org. There's the National Gianna Center.org. Both of these are just two of many examples that I could give where people can learn about natural ways to correct underlying infertility issues and try to achieve pregnancy through sexual intimacy. And if at the end of the day, this doesn't work, I would acknowledge that that is a cross. It is a cross that is the cross for that couple. We all have crosses. Some people are single and want to be married. Some people are married and want to have children. Some people are paralyzed and can't walk. We all have different crosses, and our crosses aren't to be compared, but they are to be shared. And we should do our best to try to correct underlying problems, to restore the body to health. And where that doesn't work, we should grieve. It is tragic when we are living in this imperfect world and have to bear crosses like this.
All right, fair enough. Stephanie, shall we go to calls?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's start with Paul in Cincinnati, Ohio, one of my top 10 favorite Ohio cities. Paul, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Hello, Stephanie. Thank you for taking my call. I guess I just take a little exception. You know, when you mention that in vitro couples, that, you know, there's the love may not quite be between the two people. It's bringing a stranger into the mix, and then it's, but anyway, my comment is more that if you polled couples like myself and my wife that went through in vitro years ago, successful, and, you know, even we went through trying to adopt and the whole bit, and several surgeries and the whole bit, you know, my wife's standing on her head, you know, all the funny quirks that go with it, you know, staying upside down. But mm-hmm. if you pulled married couples now that had children through in vitro, you couldn't tell me that they don't love as much as any other married couple through natural conception.
I would certainly agree with you, Paul, that the couple who conceives a child through IVF or through normal sexual intercourse can love their child the same way. So if somehow my comments kind of conveyed that I didn't think you could love your child the same way, I'm glad for the opportunity to clarify that I certainly think that you love your child or children as much as you would have if they'd been conceived through sexual intercourse. Do you mind me asking a bit about your own experience with IVF?
Sure.
How many, do you know how many embryos were created through the IVF you and your wife opted for?
It was three.
And do you know, and were all three implanted at some point, or do you know what happened with all three?
Let me see here. You're kind of going back. I believe two were implanted, and one was not, and it was not considered. Well, it was considered. It wasn't successful. It wasn't a healthy choice, and I'd have to ask my wife exactly more about that. I'm sorry, you know.
No, that's okay. And I just ask for you to consider just that sometimes when IVF is pursued, you know, the medical community will often overlook the fact that we're not talking about eggs or sperm once the fertilization has happened, that where we have embryos, we're now talking about children, and that, you know, people now, in your case, you actually remarkably had a small number created. More often than not, people will maybe have 16, 20 embryos created. And we have to remember that whether it's 3, 16, or 20, each and every one of those are individuals that are unrepeatable and irreplaceable, and that we need to value them as we value those of us who are already born. And I'll say more when we come back from the break.
You heard the music, huh? Paul, hold on if you like. We have to take this break, but we'll come right back with more discussion of in vitro fertilization from a Catholic perspective. 888-318-7884 is the number.
Catholic Answers Live.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. It's free, and you'll have instant access to our daily broadcast, the schedule of upcoming shows, and you'll even be able to search the archive and listen to thousands of past shows. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team talks about Veterans Affairs protecting religious liberty.
Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Yep, Gloria Purvis from the morning show, Morning Glory on EW10 will be here with us Friday this week, right? Friday this week, yes, looking forward to that. This hour we have Stephanie Gray with us, and we're talking about in vitro fertilization and the Catholic Church's multi-layered objection to in vitro fertilization. We were talking before with the caller from Ohio who actually dropped during the break, but you wanted to wrap up your comments about the consequences of IVF.
Sure. Well, just, you know, as Paul pointed out, you know, even though he and his wife pursued IVF, they love their child or children. It wasn't clear to me whether they had one or two that brought to term, that they love their child just the same. And I think The point is that humans can come into existence through all kinds of methods. We can come into existence through IVF. We can come into existence through a loving embrace between a married couple. We can come into existence through a hookup between two strangers. We can come into existence through an act of rape that's violent and vile. So in all four cases I think I just gave there, who comes into existence is an unrepeatable, irreplaceable individual made in the image of God. In all four scenarios, if a child is conceived, that child is good and that child is actually willed by God. But just because there is equality in the children conceived, regardless of the circumstances, there is not an equality in the circumstances of how someone is conceived. And clearly, an act of love versus an act of lust versus an act of technology versus an act of violence, all four of those things are not equal. So my point is not that the child conceived through IVF is not valuable. My point is not that the parents who have created a child through IVF do not adequately love their child. I'm not making either of those points. I'm making the point that their desire for children was good. Their end result of one or several children was good, but the means chosen to get there wasn't. And it wasn't because it took the creation of life from an act of receptivity, we're receiving life, to an act of manufacturing and forcing and making life. Even when a couple has fertility and when they know their fertility and they can optimize their likelihood of pregnancy by choosing to have sex at the most fertile time that they have as a joint in their joint relationship. Because you can have a woman who's totally fertile, but if she has an infertile husband, then she's not going to conceive a child. So if they both are very fertile, they know their fertility, they time their sex accordingly, they still can't make a baby. They're still receiving the child that may or may not come to be. What egg gets released? What sperm will reach that egg? That is beyond their control. They're just receiving that life, although optimizing the likelihood of it. But the moment you involve a third party who's taking an egg and who's taking sperm, now we're forcing, manipulating, and making an individual rather than receiving an individual. And because humans are subjects and not objects, we shouldn't be treated as objects. So objects are to be manufactured, made, used, and disposed of, but subjects are not, and right. Therefore even the reception of that life should be different.
Thank you, Stephanie. Let's go now to Maria in St. Joseph, Missouri. Maria, thank you for waiting. Your question for Stephanie Gray.
Hi, Stephanie. My question is, I asked my pastor, I said, what happens to the souls of those embryos, you know, once they've been frozen? And he said, they're in a state of suspended animation. Mm-hmm. Until they're destroyed or until they're implanted, which that just flabbergasted me, because I thought, well, maybe they're in heaven or maybe they're with God. But it's like, no, it's almost kind of like they're in a coma, like suspended animation. So I was wondering, is there like a time limit of how long an embryo can be frozen before it's either chosen for implantation or destroyed? Because to me, that just seems like every bit is a horrendous scenario as being conceived in the petri dish.
Correct, Maria. You are rightly pointing out that we have a situation of injustice for the embryos that are currently frozen, because they are being denied the right and the ability to grow and develop through the natural stages of human development at the time they normally would, with the peers they would normally grow up with. But they're also being denied eternal life with their creator God, because they are not dead. So their soul will not leave the body because they're still alive. But they're in this kind of, as you pointed, a suspended state or a frozen state where they're not dead, but they're also not able to grow. And so what happens on an individual level is really based on the couple, the clinic. Friends of mine adopted 4 frozen embryos. They had 2 of them implanted each time, so 2 separate implantation processes. And we can get into the ethics of whether it is ethical or not to adopt frozen embryos, but this couple friend of mine did opt to do this. And in their case, interestingly, they chose embryos that had been frozen, I believe, for 20 years. And they knew by going for those 4 children who had been frozen that long, the likelihood of those children implanting and successfully being carried to term was quite low because they'd been frozen so long. But interestingly, and quite beautifully, I think my friend's thought process was, we want to go for the least desirable children. And anyone who is going to adopt a frozen embryo is not likely going to want the 20-year-old embryos. So because no one will want those children, we will take those children. And unfortunately, all four passed away and did not successfully implant and carry through to a pregnancy. But all four were loved by my friends and at least died in the body of a woman who tried to mother them to the best of her ability.
Okay, Maria?
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Maria. There are, I don't know if this is even a relevant thing to bring up, but there was that crazy story this week about a woman who tried to do in vitro fertilization. Two babies that were not hers were implanted in her, and then when the babies were born, the court took them away and gave them to the biological parents. It's horrifying to think of some of the things that are happening.
Exactly. And again, this is the complicated and terrible terrain that comes with making life rather than receiving life. Yeah. That then you get mistakes that are more serious than you have a mistake when you're making, I don't know, a new sofa or a couch or a chair.
Right.
You know, like when you make a mistake implanting one human into the body of the wrong mother, that has very serious consequences for other human beings. And so we need to be very aware. And the other thing too is unfortunately, even the language, the nature of IVF is it treats the human person as property. So these embryos are considered property.
Right.
So even when you rescue, if you opt to adopt frozen embryos, legally, what happens is there's a property transfer. The parents that are the biological parents of the children who had them frozen and who now agree to them being adopted by another couple, it's not the same language as when you're adopting a born child. It's considered a property transfer, and there's legal paperwork to show ownership of that property is transferred from the biological parents to the adoptive parents. So again, we see this type of language that reinforces that we're manufacturing, treating humans as objects rather than subjects. Now, I'm happy to take another call, Si, but if there isn't one, or it just occurs to me that we could also talk about the ethics of embryo adoption, which I've given an example of someone who pursued, but would love to have a little discussion on the Catholic angle of that.
Well, it turns out you do have several callers who want to talk to you.
Okay, so, well, let's go there to the phones
first. All right, let's go to Mary. I don't have a location for you, Mary, but are you there with us, Mary?
Yes, I am.
And your question for Stephanie.
I was wondering if there's any kind of research on children who are conceived by IVF as they're growing up, if they have more behavioral issues or allergies or any other kind of, more problems than naturally conceived children.
That's a great question. I'm sure there are studies out there. I don't have them at my fingertips and aren't aware of them, so unfortunately I can't speak to that. But I will say, in an experience I had with a young woman, a college student conceived by IVF, what struck me is that psychologically there's going to be a similar mentality amongst IVF-conceived children as time goes on, which is a reality amongst children who learn that their parents had abortions. So there's been a psychologist, he's either a psychologist or a psychiatrist, Dr. Philip Ney, who's done a lot of research on post-abortion syndrome as it relates to children discovering their parents had aborted siblings. So not post-abortive syndrome of a woman aborting the child and the psychological toll that takes on her, but the psychological toll of being the one chosen, but discovering that there were siblings that weren't chosen. And that there's been some research showing that children who've lost siblings to abortion almost have an identity crisis. Like, why was I chosen? And do my parents ever think they wish they picked one of those other pregnancies rather than me? And that same thing can come to play with someone conceived by IVF. I was debating a college student about abortion, and she told me she was conceived by IVF, and she couldn't wrap her mind around the fact that life began at fertilization. And I gave all the science, nothing was getting through to her, and then it struck me. I'm having a difficult time getting through to her because this is personal for her. If she admits life begins at fertilization, then if she, for example, was an only child, she's going to have to admit that she's actually not an only child. Because if life begins at fertilization, then she might have to come to terms with the fact that she had 5, 10, 15, or 20 siblings that she never met because her parents had them frozen, or because her parents had them killed, or because her parents had them experimented on in a scientific lab and then ultimately destroyed. And if she has a bad relationship with her parents and feels like she's never good enough, she might wonder, do they wish they'd picked a different embryo? So this type of psychological toll, I think we're going to see happening, and it's therefore creating an opportunity for two things. One, we need to help people understand that out of any bad, God brings good. And so the child conceived by IVF is a good result from a bad action, and that's the redeeming of the bad action. And so for those children to see, I am intended by God, even if how I was conceived wasn't intended. And the second thing I think we need to develop is a whole healing program for people who have pursued IVF, just as a post-abort woman needs to grieve the loss of the child or children that she chose abortion for. I believe couples who have chosen IVF need to grieve the loss of the many children they may have conceived but never brought to term. And the good news is God is merciful, so that if people have made that choice and can't undo what they've done, there is hope and there's forgiveness, and there's an opportunity here in the church to really speak about that.
Mary, we got to take a break, so I'll say thank you very much for that call. More calls on the other side of the break. If you have a question about the Catholic position on in vitro fertilization, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884 right after this.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Now, when Jesus was on earth, he taught us a great lesson. He taught us that he came for the sinner, not the virtuous. He came for you because you are imperfect, because sin comes easy to you, and sometimes you don't have the willpower to say no.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Another free ebook for you, Getting Started with the Early Church Fathers. It's available right now at shop.catholic.com, and by free, I mean free. You can just have the free ebook, Getting Started with the Early Church Fathers. The Early Church Fathers were extremely important to the growth and the spreading and the understanding of the early church, and that's why we want to give you this free ebook. Go over and get it at shop.catholic.com. Stephanie Gray is our guest this hour. Carla Broussard will be our guest next hour. If you got a Catholic doctrine, it'll probably be in vitro fertilization. they'll say, I oppose that one. But if you got a Catholic doctrine that gives you trouble, one that you just like, I either can't get behind 100% or I can't get behind at all, next hour is for you. Carla will be here to help you maybe come to grips with your opposition to some of the teachings of the Catholic Church. Again, if you still have time, if you want to chat with Stephanie, 888-318-7884 is the number. And callers, I am going to get to you, but I just want to clarify something with you. It's a somewhat fraught moral and ethical problem, the idea of, is it okay? Is it not okay to adopt frozen embryos? Mm-hmm. Can you just kind of walk us through what the questions are there, or what the problems are?
Sure. So there is a debate in the church right now amongst very good theologians, philosophers, ethicists, who all agree that the creation of life outside of sexual intimacy is wrong. So IVF is wrong. But they debate about whether, once IVF has happened, whether it's ethical or not for couples to rescue these frozen embryos who are in many cases abandoned by their biological parents. So some people would say that is not ethical ethical for anyone to have an embryo implanted in them. Other people would say it is ethical. And so a few things I want to point out. The first is that the church came out with a document many years ago called Dignitatis Personae, which spoke about how we are to interact with the embryo or not interact with the embryo. And it spoke about how embryo research is something that's happening and that that is obviously unacceptable. In that same document, it spoke about how some people might pursue embryo adoption as a treatment for their infertility. And it said that's also not ethically acceptable because you cannot treat your infertility as by way of adopting these embryos. But then the document curiously references people who would pursue embryo adoption for the sake of the embryos themselves, not to do research, not to treat their own infertility, but to rescue the children who need to be rescued. And the language in the document changes at that point. It says that this presents various problems. Now, it does present various problems, but my point is that whereas earlier in the document, certain things were clearly and obviously condemned as unacceptable, this particular path of adopting embryos for the sake of the embryos is described with less strong language, and it's saying it presents various problems, which it does. My position, I would say at the end of the day, I bow down to the church's teaching and default to what the church says, but my understanding is this is a gray area where the church is still deciding where to ultimately rest its position. So in the research I have done, the position that I would hold is that I do not believe in principle that embryo adoption is wrong, but in practice, there may not be many situations in which it would be ethical necessarily to pursue. So I would argue the sin of IVF is the creation of children outside of sexual intimacy in a lab. The sin is over with. My point is that generation should not happen outside the body. But since generation has happened outside the body, I would argue that a woman could, in principle, ethically gestate a child who's already generated in the way a woman could wet nurse a child who needs breast milk if the child's own biological mother is not producing enough breast milk. So I would argue that it would be wrong for a woman to introduce in her body sperm, which is not her husband's sperm. It would be wrong for a woman to allow her egg to be fertilized by sperm, which is not her husband's sperm. It would be wrong for a woman to engage in a sexual act with a man who is not her husband. But when a woman pursues embryo adoption, she's not introducing a stranger's sperm into her body. She's not allowing her egg to be fertilized by a stranger's sperm, nor is she engaging in a sexual act. So what I would argue is she is gestating, providing nourishment and a safe environment to an orphan child the way a born a woman could do that for a born child who needs breast milk or who needs a safe environment. But in practice, it may be difficult to find people properly suited to do that. One quick example, and then I'll wrap this up, would be a married couple who are fertile might say, okay, well, let's rescue this preborn child. But in the case of embryo adoption, by rescuing the preborn child amongst a couple who have their own fertility, by putting the child in the mother's womb, they are creating a situation where they are incapable of conceiving their own child for 9+ months because the womb is occupied by another person's child, even though they want to help the orphan. And is there a duty for that married couple, without serious reasons to avoid getting pregnant, is there a duty to be open to their own children? And by occupying their uterus with someone else's child, they're not following through on that duty. So that would be one dilemma or problem that could arise in practice, even though I argue in principle I don't think it's wrong.
All righty. Thank you very much for that clarification. Let's go to Nate in Dallas, Texas, watching on YouTube Live. Nate, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Hi, thanks. Good afternoon. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
So my question is more of a hypothetical. Like if, for instance, a couple who loved each other and wanted to have kids had tried for the period of 2 years and had therefore lost up to 24 fertilized eggs that had not implanted or not successfully come to term, how many lives would they save by doing IVF? They would stop pursuing a futile course and instead go for a course that does result in a life and also result in less no more futile attempts. Or if they wanted to, instead of if they had determined that the woman had a hostile womb, they optioned for a surrogate mother instead to carry this child to term. Why isn't that saving lives? How many lives are they potentially rescuing or preventing from being naturally killed?
Good question. I think the first point we need to make, Nate, is that there is a difference between someone dying naturally versus someone being killed purposefully. So in the case of losing 24 children by miscarriage, that is a deeply sad situation that is a great call for grieving. But those children weren't intentionally killed. With IVF, you create a situation where you have many embryos that are put in danger, some of which may be killed. And you can't justify that on the basis that some children may die naturally. But I would say it's also a false dilemma to say I will continually conceive and miscarry, or there's IVF. That why is the woman miscarrying? There could be, for example, a very serious hormonal imbalance. Maybe there's progesterone issues where she doesn't have a high enough level of progesterone, which is why she's continually miscarrying. So the solution doesn't have to be IVF. The solution can be proper hormone treatment to get her body up to the right hormone levels. Now, I'm not saying this is the answer in a very specific case you might be thinking of, because I don't know enough of the specifics, but just in general terms to speak about the principle that you're speaking of, there's ways we can work to avoid miscarriage that do not involve replacing that with an act which takes the creation of life, puts it in a lab, turns human beings into objects that can be made, but rather they should be begotten. As for surrogacy, again, it involves treating the human person as though they're an object, that when someone comes into existence, it should be an act of love, not I'm going to hire you to carry a baby, I'm going to create in a lab, and you're going to bond with that baby, but then at the end of it all, I want you to give that baby to me because it's mine. That's my baby. That's not your baby. I'm using you, and it's about use, whether we realize it's about use or not, because we can have a desire, a good desire and a good intention, but the actions still be very much guided by a philosophy of use rather than receptivity.
Nate, thank you very much for that call. 888-318-7884, our number. And we go now to Christopher in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on 1150 AM Iowa Catholic Radio. Christopher, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Good evening. So I read a theologian, he's also a bioethicist, offer the possible solution of having like a artificial womb to be an option for these embryos that are excess embryos that are frozen. And I guess I just wanted to ask what your opinion would be if you've heard that before, and just kind of your thoughts and comments about that. Because when I heard that, it really, really troubled me, and I haven't been really able to get over his comments on that idea.
Okay.
Yeah, good question, because it makes us think like a sci-fi movie where you just have rows of human beings kind of in incubators. I mean, we do have artificial wombs. That's what incubators are. And if you go to a neonatal intensive care unit for babies that are approximately 24 weeks or older, you're actually going to see a row of babies in incubators. But any parent or healthcare worker who's worked in those areas know that's not ideal. And that we are only putting these babies in these incubators because without them, they will literally die because the womb has no longer been able to be the safe environment for those children. So my concern with an artificial womb that if it could be created could happen even earlier, as great as it would be that we save these children, it seems to me if we can have an environment where they are connected to another human person, the mother-child relationship, pregnancy, that is more ideal than the artificial environment. So we only go with the artificial environment where we don't have the physical environment. So that's where, again, it comes back to what I only touched on, is if in principle embryo adoption is not wrong, in practice, are there enough cases where it would be okay to pursue so that we can gestate children under the loving heart of a woman in a nurturing environment of a womb rather than in an artificial environment? But where there were to be artificial environments, if that were the only option, I think we would need to interact with those children in the artificial environment like we do in the artificial environment of a neonatal intensive care unit. Those children have someone at their bedside. Usually it's their parents. And they're being touched or looked at or hands are on the little glass case as much as possible to let the child know that they're not alone. And I don't think we should ever create an environment where we're just gestating humans in an artificial environment where there is not connection or concern on a relational level and the presence of another.
Chris, thank you very much for the call. Sorry to all the callers we weren't able to get to. Lots and lots of calls for Stephanie today. Stephanie Gray, tell us again where people can find you if they're looking for
you. Please go to my website, loveunleasheslife.com. On my blog, I have a 6-part series on this topic, so you can read that and contact me, loveunleasheslife.com.
Stephanie Gray, thank you very, very much. It's such an important topic. I'm glad we got we were able to get such a highly qualified person to help us reason through it. We might have to do it again. I don't know.
I was going to say, let's do it again.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of calls. Next hour, however, Carlo Broussard's coming in, and we're going to talk about which Catholic doctrine bothers you. If you got one you just can't quite accept, or maybe you you can accept it, but you're having trouble, which Catholic doctrine troubles you next with Carlo Broussard on Catholic Answers Live.